recognize the historic sacrificial system by which sins were forgiven. Christ as a lamb then is a picture of meekness and humility and lowliness. Now here's one of the most amazing things in the Christian religion, and many a person has missed out on it, much to their spiritual detriment and much to the detriment of their devotional life, because this can help you in your devotional life, however strong a Christian you may be, and however much you may know about the death of Christ. Have you ever realized that if we want to know what God the Father is like in heaven today, we're to look at Jesus? In the face of Jesus is the heart of the Father revealed. What do you find when you meet Jesus? You find meekness and lowliness and humility. Had you stopped to think that at the heart of the mighty God who created this universe, who is in sovereign control of all things, there is meekness and lowliness, that this is the God you can approach? If he's like Jesus and humble in his heart, you can talk to God in prayer, and he's interested in listening to a nobody like me or to like you. You know, when Jesus says, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest," what is the main incentive he gives to come? He doesn't mention his greatness, though he was tremendously great, or his power, though he had all power in heaven and on earth. He mentions one thing: "For I am meek and lowly of heart." Isn't that wonderful? The God whom we serve, meekness and lowliness in his heart, seen in Jesus, and we can go to him. And he receives such as we are. No reason to stay away from him if that's the way he is. And then Christ as the Lamb speaks of the whole sacrificial system of the Old Testament, whereby an innocent lamb was put on the altar, and the high priest put his hands on the lamb, and that was symbolic of the transfer of the sins of the people of Israel from the into the hands of the high priest and then into the lamb. And then a knife was put on the lamb, and he was slain. He died in the place of the people, and his blood poured down. That was symbolic that sins were paid for and were forgiven, and there was safety in the blood. Now, that is the picture of what Jesus Christ did in his life and in his death for us. His humility and his sacrifice. His whole life, you see, was a sacrifice. It didn't just begin on the cross of Calvary. His very birth. What a tremendous humiliation and a sacrifice it was for him to be made a man. He who was God. He who brought the galaxies into being to be compassed in the body of a little infant. What a tremendous sacrifice. What a lowering of himself that he would do a thing like this. Why, that more amazing than if you could become an ant or a flea, that God would become a little infant, and that in a low and a humble condition, in a stable. Oh, that we could speak of his life, how that was a sacrifice, a giving and a serving. Never had much of a home of his own. He said, "Foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, and yet the Son of Man hath nowhere to lay his head." How he gave and how he loved, how he bore the abuse and the insults of evil men and kept on loving. Oh, that we see the sacrifice and the lamb-like quality of his life the most vividly of all in the last day of his life on earth, and his suffering and his passion. Three-fourths of the Gospels are devoted to this. That's just how important it is to our salvation and to the economy of God. Three-fourths of the Gospels devoted to the last few days of the life of Christ, when he was in the garden sweating the great drops of blood, as we were saying. William Law, a theologian, a writer in 18th century England, said that the only explanation he had of the agony of Christ in the garden was simply this. And it shocked me the first time I heard it, and yet the more I think of it, the more I think it must be right. That in the suffering of Christ, we see opening up the pains of a lost soul in hell. Sufferings of Jesus in the garden are a picture of the opening up of the pains of a lost soul in hell. That is what he was going through. Oh, he's feeling so lonely, he asked the disciples to stay with him. You know, I used to think that when Christ asked the disciples to stay with him and to pray, that he was just trying to teach them a lesson. But I don't think that's right anymore. I think he actually needed their fellowship. He was feeling so lonely because he was being made sin. And for the first time in all eternity, he was being cut off from the fellowship of his Father because he was being made the sin bearer, and God is of purer eyes than to behold evil, and he has to turn away from what is sinful. And he was turning away from his Son, and his Son was dreadfully lonely. And then we read how he was betrayed and how he allowed himself to be taken to the court of the high priest and then to Pilate. You know the hymn, Jesus is standing in Pilate's hall, friendless, forsaken, betrayed by all, not a one to speak up for him, not a friend on earth. How they made fun of him, how they spat in his face, how they plucked out his beard for the roots, beat on him with great long reeds, stuck over his lovely sacred vow, his brow, a crown of cruel sharp thorns, and the blood flows down his face and mingles with the tears that he's shedding for our sin and for our salvation. The Roman soldiers take him out of the court of Pilate, and we're told that it was customary to take him into the middle of a big stone court in the barracks, and they tie his arms and his hands around a marble pillar till his back is very tight. And then they come with a Roman cat of nine tails, a whip with nine leather strands, and their pieces of metal and broken glass in those strands, and they began to beat on his back until, as someone is said, the bones of his back stand out like marble columns in a sea of blood. Bearing shame and scoffing rude, in my place condemned he stood. And the next day they take him up the Via Dolorosa, the way of sorrows, street of tears, up to the hill of Calvary. And something very strange happened on that hill of Calvary that day that we are never able to enter into completely. Somehow he who knew no sin was made to be sin that we might be the righteousness of God in him. And God takes all of my pride and all of my sins and all of my wrongdoing and my selfishness and my littleness and my meanness, and lays it on the head of this holy, loving, just, perfect, righteous one, and begins turning his face away from him. Found a few years ago an amazing Easter sermon of a man named Melito of Sardis, a bishop who lived in the year about 169 A.D., and in this Easter sermon, found these remarkable words that he was preaching on the suffering of Jesus. He said, "Behold, how strange it is that he should be on a cross. He who fixed the stars in their places is now fixed on a wooden cross with nails. He who hung the earth and the moon and the sun in space now hangs on a wooden beam. He from whose hand first flowed in creative power all the streams and the rivers and the oceans and the seas of this world, now his mouth is so dry that he's crying out, 'I thirst, how could it be?' And everything begins to get dark. You remember the eclipse of the sun 3 or 4 years ago? Some of us were watching how the bees began to come to their hives about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. How the chickens began to go to the chicken house to roost because everything was getting dark, an eclipse in the daytime. And that's what it was like in the death of Christ. The sun refused to shine. He said, I am the light of the world, and look what men have done. They've tried to put out that light. And it becomes completely identified with our sins, and God the Father turns away from him, and that's when Christ cries out from Psalm 22, verse 1 in Hebrews, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And his blood pours to the earth. And in that event is the great exchange when God takes my sin and puts it on the head of Christ and takes the righteousness of Christ and puts it on my head. One of the first hymns I ever learned and one of the first hymns we should teach our children and one of the last hymns that we should whisper into the ears of those that are on their bed dying is just this. Jesus paid it all. All to him I owe. Sin had left a crimson stain. He washed it white as snow. And when before the throne I stand in him complete, Jesus died my soul to save. My lips shall still repeat, Jesus paid it all. I mentioned to you before how from Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, the picture of the pilgrim who is going through the hard country. Name is Christian, and he has a great burden on his back. It gets heavier all the time. He can't seem to get rid of it. But then one day he comes to a cross. And the burden rolls from off his back, and it rolls past that cross, down into an empty tomb, and it's gone. And the pilgrim is set free. Do you see the point? This is where burdens can roll off, my friends. This is where you can have joy in the death of Jesus, because his death gives us life. One of the holiest men that I've ever read about was a man named Robert Murray McShane, lived about 140 years ago, I reckon, in Dundee, Scotland. And he wrote a wonderful book entitled The Believer's Joy. And this is what he says about the death of Christ. He says, God looks at the crucified Christ. The holy God, who had wrath and enmity against me because of my sin, God looks at me and sees wrath. And then he looks at Christ, crucified for me, and in the heart of God there's peace and love towards me. And I, a sinner, afraid of God, afraid to draw near, scared to turn my life over to him, look at Christ on the cross, dying for me, and I see the love of God and the goodness of God, and peace is in my heart. That's the meaning of the death of Christ. Christ between us and God, and peace reigns in heaven, and peace reigns on our hearts on earth. The glory that Christ shone in his death. His death is our life. And then we'll, if all be well, go on tonight to speak of how his death issued in victory, how he was raised in glory, and how that risen life is able to flow into us now and to make us new persons and to transform us. Wonderful it is. We'll leave you this morning as we come to the Lord's table with the thoughts that he was wounded for our transgressions, bruised for our iniquities, the chastisement of our peace is upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. Christ is living, he's available, he can be known, he can be touched, you can reach out and know him. Let us sing as our communion hymn, number 198, verses 1 and 2.